This is tape number 12, the No Fault Formula. In this part, Len describes a simple five-step process that you can use on your own and with others to implement the principles of no-fault negotiating and to stay in generative thinking. This process can be used to analyze problems or to verbally address any issues with others in order to draw boundaries and to resolve conflicts or to reach agreement. It can also be used to achieve mutual understanding with others. Refer to handouts number 20 and 21 in your booklet.
Our topic is the no-fault formula. As Tom said, it's a simple five-step process that you can use to implement the principles that we've talked about throughout this series. And it's a process that will keep you in generative thinking. I've said for years that the no-fault formula will get you everything you ever wanted from anybody you ever wanted it from. And people always laugh when I say that. And I get cynical comments about, sure. And while I say it in a joking way, and I get those reactions, the fact is I really believe it's true. I think this really is, in some ways, a magical formula. It's deceptively simple. It, in fact, can enable you to get the results you want in surprisingly effective ways with others. So let's talk about what it is. There are five steps. I see, I assume, I feel, I need, I want. The formula really reflects the process of how we work, how our mind works as human beings, that we take in data, we interpret it through our belief systems. Depending upon how we interpret the data, the sensory data that comes into us, we have some chemical, electrical, emotional reaction in us that makes us aware of what we need, and it causes us to act on the world, which in turn causes different stimulus to come in that we interpret. It's like we go through this process continuously. So what we want to do in this series is to learn how to use this in a conscious way for ourselves. The formula really will enable you to do what we've talked about in principle throughout this series. Let's look at each of the steps. The first step, the IC, is the data step. It's the step in which we need to identify, describe, to name for ourselves what all of our facts are. What do we know? What's true? What's been true up to now? And our data may be factual data. It may be statistical data. It may be historical data. It may be observations about what other people have said and done or what they have not said and done. Or in the moment, it may be observing what other people are saying and doing and what's happening. It's simply getting clear about what our facts are without interpretation, without judgment, just what do we know? What's our data? The second step, I assume, is the step of trying to understand our data. It's the step in which we make meaning. It's the step in which we explore why we think these conditions exist and what the relationships are between them and what can we understand about them. It may mean trying to understand why someone else is doing what they're doing instead of doing what we wish they were doing. It may mean trying to understand the cause and effect relationships between the events that have occurred. It may mean trying to understand what has happened or what hasn't happened or trying to understand how things have changed over time. It's trying to understand. There's a very important distinction I need to make about this stage, and that is the difference, again, goes back to our original concept of understanding versus being right. It's to know the difference between exploring and trying to understand data versus evaluating and judging data. A frequent response I get from people when they're in lower levels of thinking and in training sessions is, but we judge all the time. That's our job. I mean, how can we solve problems without making judgments? Well, that's true. But there's a difference between judging things against some predetermined standards versus exploring and trying to understand what something means. And that's a very important distinction. Judging something against some external predetermined standards versus trying to understand what something means, why it exists in the form that it does. This is a stage of wondering, not judging. We know when we're judging because we're sure that we're right. We know that we're judging because we do have predetermined standards of how something is supposed to be measured against, of what something is supposed to fit into. We know that we're judging when we make broad generalized statements that make people right or wrong. On the other hand, we know that we're understanding when we're specific, when we're tentative, when we're exploring instead of challenging. It's important to know the difference, because if I distort this step and slip into my trying to be right, slip into my judgments, then I'm not doing the process and I'm pushing other people away from me. On the other hand, when I try to understand, I draw people towards me. I draw them on the same side of the table, and we're able to explore it together. So the first step is getting clear about what our facts are, and the second step is trying to understand what that data means. And as I do that, then the third step is to understand, be able to measure or name what the results are that we're getting at this time or that we've gotten up to now. And the results may be in any form. The results may be emotional impact on people, so it may be what I'm feeling and what others are feeling. Or the results may be in terms of quantity of production or quality of production, what the yield or scrap rate is in a production process. The results may be in terms of relationships and to what degree relationships are safe, fair, and resolved, safe, respectful, and resolved. The results may be in terms of attitudes or climate in an organization. It may be in terms of the levels of commitment that exist, how it impacts people's levels of thinking. So the results may be in any area. What's important about these first three steps is that they enable us to define what current reality is. It enables us to define what we've got up to now. What's especially important about the first step is that unless you and I have the same data, unless you and I agree upon what reality is up front, then we have no place to go from there. I worked recently with a company that, again, happened to be a union company, and the union was planning on going out on strike over benefit salaries issues. And when I reviewed the financials of the organization, what I saw was that they had been steadily declining and losing money over the past 3 years because they had not been able to bring a new product to market and their product wasn't very competitive anymore. And that, in fact, in the past year, they had lost $3 million. When I went to the union and said, "So tell me what kind of profits this company makes." And they said, "We know what kind of profits this company makes. We ship the stuff out the door. They made somewhere between $20 and $30 million in the last year." Well, clearly, if a company has lost three and the employees think they've made 30, they're not playing in the same sandbox. Of course they have disagreement about salaries and benefits and who should pay what for the insurance. Of course they're in conflict. And this company had a policy of not sharing financial information with their employees on the assumption their employees would somehow use it against them. Was costing them a lot. So it's essential that you and I are playing in the same sandbox, that we have the same data, because if we don't, then we have nothing to talk about very constructively. It's also essential that you and I spend the time to try to understand how we're interpreting that data, what sense it means, what sense it makes to each of us, what it means to each of us. Because we have the same data, we may assume that it means the same to everybody. That's rarely the case, because we bring different histories to it. We bring different experience. We bring different filters through our beliefs. So we need to explore that together to see how it makes different sense to different people as they think about it from their perspective or their positions. And finally, in this third step, in the impact step, we need to get clear about the kind of results we're getting now, because that tells us how important the issue is to us. Sometimes we get all worked up about issues that in fact aren't very important. You have an example in your booklet of using the tool using the process as an analytical tool. And this is a real example from a company I went into where they had taken production standards off the manufacturing floor. And the supervisors were very upset. They were angry about it because they claimed that production had dropped a lot, because the employees had a bad attitude and didn't care. So It had caused a lot of conflict and friction in the organization, and employees who were feeling misjudged and angry and in fact were engaged in a slowdown because they were angry with the supervisors. So the situation was escalating. So I went around and did a little data gathering and found out that in fact production was off, and that there were a number of factors that were related to that. The fact that the organization had brought in a bunch of new automated equipment, but it wasn't all set up and running effectively. The fact that people had not been trained on how to maintain the new equipment, or been trained on how to use the new equipment. The fact that there were historical conflicts between work groups and between some of the employees and some of the first line supervisors. The fact that some of the first line supervisors tended to be strong peacemakers and scorekeepers themselves, and so they weren't addressing issues, and they were in indirect ways were paying employees back. There were a whole host of reasons why productivity was off, and it couldn't be boiled down to a simple judgment that employees had a bad attitude, that they didn't care. They, in fact, they cared a lot. But they felt that there were all kinds of issues stacked against them. So as we went through and analyzed that, though, what we found was that while production was off, that employees, in fact, in many cases were producing less, that their actual levels of productivity were not that important. That what was most important to this company in this particular time is the fact that their raw material costs had gone up 300%, and that what they most needed to focus on was finding alternative sources of material. That, in fact, the differences in productivity was having a minimal impact on the revenues of the company. That people were all worked up about an issue that really wasn't very important to them, and that, in fact, had been oversimplified because of the judgments of the first line supervisors. That the real issue for the first line supervisors were that they weren't highly developed individuals, and they didn't feel supported by senior management, and they no longer felt like they had any tools. They felt powerless. So this is a situation where the real issues weren't being addressed, and the things that really were having an impact on the organization were being misinterpreted and avoided. So these first three steps are important. It's important that we're in the same sandbox, we have the same data. It's important that we understand how each of us view the data, and it's important that we're clear about the results or impact we're getting now, either because the results aren't very important, or the other side of that oftentimes is true, that something is very important to us and it's costing us a lot, such as supervisors feeling disempowered, but that we're ignoring that. We're ignoring something that really does have a lot of impact on the organization. The fourth step, then, I need, is what moves us into the future. If the first three steps identify what we've got now, step four, then, names or identifies what we'd like to have different from that. So it's a step that we define what the outcomes are, what the results are that we want that are different from what we're getting now. It's being clear about what we need, either personally or organizationally, and being clear about what the other parties need and how we can translate those into objectives that begin to give us an image of what else is possible. It's in this stage that we're able to imagine the possibility of something different. This is really a critical stage I find oftentimes when I'm using this process to coach other people, where somebody comes in with a problem, And I'll say, well, you know, give me all the information. Tell me what's been going on, data. And in the course of that, I listen to what their beliefs are, what they're telling me about it. And if I'm not clear about it, I'll say, well, you know, tell me what you're thinking about that. You know, what do you see as important about that? And so how is that impacting you and the organization? You know, how is that affecting your customers? What kind of results are you getting now? And then the critical question, the stage four, is so tell me what it is you want different. And if what I find is they go back to complaining about how things are, and they go back to blaming other people, and they're not able to give me some different outcome or some result, if they're not able to demonstrate to me that they have some commitment to having a relationship with the people in the future that is constructive, then it tells me they're stuck in the past. It tells me they're stuck in lower levels of thinking. It tells me they have limited commitment. It tells me they're focused on being right and making somebody else wrong and beating other people. They're not committed to creating something different in the future. This is a critical step for ourselves and others. Are we willing to let go of the past and create something different? And the way I know that is whether or not I can imagine the possibility of something different. It's whether or not I can, in fact, define outcomes, results, objectives that I'd like to achieve. The fifth step, then, is our plan of action. It's what it is that we are willing to do to achieve our objectives, to make them happen, and what it is we want others to do. And I really want to emphasize the to do. This step has to do with behaviors. It has to do with what we're going to do. So how do we tend to confuse this process? Well, we tend to do it in a number of ways. Going back to our core concept of understanding versus being right, when we're not using this process, when we want to be right, what we tend to do is gather a little bit of data, make judgments about it, and then jump to step five. We jump to our solutions. We jump to what it is we want other people to do. And of course, oftentimes they don't do it because they don't have the same data. They don't have the same understanding of it. They haven't assessed the importance of it. And there's not mutual understanding about what both parties need. It doesn't make sense to them. It doesn't make sense to them in terms of meeting their own needs. And so they don't commit to helping us carry out our solutions. So what's important is that I be clear about what I want to do in my negotiation. This process can help me be in a posture of creating mutual understanding rather than being right. So how do I confuse this process? Well, I confuse steps one and two, especially when I'm being judgmental with partial data, that I think I'm talking about data when I'm really talking about my judgments about the data. So I can say things, the employees, they don't really care. They've got bad attitudes. They'll get by with anything they can get away with. And I think I'm talking about data. I'm not talking about any data. I'm talking about all my judgments. The other thing that we confuse is sometimes steps two and three. We confuse impact, again, with our judgments. And the most common way we do that is when we use the phrase, I feel that. We think that we're describing impact on us. We think we're telling somebody what we're feeling, what our state of being is, what we're experiencing. But the word that makes it really a statement of belief. I'm saying, I think that. And I usually am saying, I think that I'm right and you're wrong. So be aware of when you hear yourself or hear others use the term, I feel that. They're not telling you impact. They're telling you what they think. And they're usually telling you their judgments. We also oftentimes find that people skip over step four. They skip over telling other people what they really need because somehow that seems vulnerable. It seems vulnerable to let other people know how important it really is to us. We assume that other people somehow will take advantage of that if they know it. And so we skip from the first stage then to telling other people what we want them to do. But again, if they can't feel the importance of it to us, if they can't see why it's important, if they can't hear it, if it doesn't make sense to them, if we cannot clearly articulate what the needs are, then the solution doesn't make any sense. Our job is to make it as easy as possible for them to understand our needs. And if I don't tell them, they're not likely to know it. And our job is to understand that about others. So the final thing that we confuse is that we confuse steps four and five. We oftentimes confuse what we want other people to do with what it is that we need to achieve. So I'll say to somebody, I want you to go do this. But what we don't say is what it's going to do for us, why that's important if they do it. We don't say that what I need is to have such and such results. So there are multiple ways that we can use this process. We can use it as an analytical tool. either individually or with a group. For example, I may have a situation where an employee is coming late, and I may not be sure how to address it with the employee. So I may give myself a couple of minutes to think through it, or even to write it out, to figure it out in terms of the five steps in the formula. So what's my data? Well, my data is that they've been late three times in the last week. And data is that I gave the person a performance review last week, a week ago, and that they walked out silently. Another piece of data may be that the person normally stops by my office and chats with me and tells me jokes, and that they haven't done that in the last week. So that's all data. Other data may be that when they don't show up on time, it creates confusion in the office, and people come to me and ask me questions because customers call and they don't have the answers. So what are my assumptions? What do I understand about that? Step two. Well, I'm wondering if the person is angry about their performance review. I'm wondering if I have a conflict. Or I'm wondering if the person has some other issues going on in their life that is preventing them from getting here on time. What's the impact? Well, the impact is that customers aren't getting answers when they call. And impact is that there is confusion in the office. And impact is that when they come to me, I can't get my own work done. Impact may be that there's some resentment because other people believe that I'm letting this employee get away with something. Impact may be that I'm feeling frustrated and concerned about it. Those are all possible impacts. So what do I need? Well, I need to not have the confusion in the office. I need for customers to get answers when they call. I need to not have resentment. I need people to feel cooperative on the staff. And I need to not have to replace this person because they're a valuable employee. I need to get this resolved. So what's my plan of action? Well, I'm going to make sure I'm here when he arrives today, and I want to talk to them about it and stay with it until we get some mutual understanding and get it resolved. So I might then use this as a verbal tool. So when Hank comes in, I may say, Hank, you know, I need to talk. I'm concerned because you've been late three times in the last week, and I'm aware you haven't stopped by to tell me any of your jokes in the last week. I'm wondering if you're upset over your performance review last week. And I'm wondering if there's something else going on in your life that's preventing you from being here on time. I need for you to understand the impact that it has on the office when you've been late and haven't let anyone know. So I'd go ahead and describe that impact to Hank. I need for everyone to be here on time, and I need to have customers' answers provided when they call. And I need to have this worked out between you and I. I value you a lot, and I certainly don't want to have to replace you. And I want you to be happy here. So I need to know what you can tell me. I need to know what's going on. Hank's response then becomes my new step one. Hank may say, I don't want to talk about this. So I've got some data. He doesn't want to talk about it, but I don't know what it means. I don't really know what he's feeling. I don't know what he's needing. So I need to go ask for those pieces. So my response might be, well, I hear you saying you don't want to talk about it. And I guess when I don't want to talk about something, it's because I don't believe it can be resolved, or I think it's going to get solved and it's not going to be in my favor, or something seems threatening. And I don't know what that is. I'm sort of in the dark. I'm wondering what's going on. I'm feeling some real urgency that I think it's important that we get this resolved, that we talk it through, that if we don't talk about it, we can't resolve it. So tell me what you need to be able to talk about this now. Tell me what's really going on. And Hank's response may be, I think it's really unfair that after all I've produced in a year that I get judged on what's happened in the last 3 months. So we're off from there. I just stay with the process. The process is written in a logical sequence, but we don't always talk in a logical, analytical way. I can use the process in any order. I can start at any point, provided I don't start with step five. And in fact, oftentimes, if there is some conflict, or if it's a tense situation, I want to start with step four. Start with being vulnerable. Start by telling the other person what I need, and then go back to my data and assumptions and so forth. I can do it any messy way. I just don't start with step five. So I can use it as an analytical tool. I can use it as a verbal tool. I can use it as an analytical tool with a group where we just brainstorm through the steps. So we might do it on a chart pad. So as a group, what's our data about our building project? You know, we're 2 weeks late. We've got these people online. We've gotten these calls. We try to together understand our data, figure out what kind of results we've got now. What do we need to do differently? And so what's our plan? What are we going to do? I oftentimes use this process, walk groups through this process to help them plan for a negotiation that they need to go and do. Or you can use it to solve any kind of problem. It'll keep the group focused and on track. Also be aware that this is a very effective diagnostic tool, that if you need to go in and analyze some situation to figure out what's going on, it tells you the questions to ask. You need to go ask what the data is and what people are thinking and what the impact is. It's a way to very quickly get to and identify what the core issues are and what the objectives are that need to be addressed. It's also a very effective process for listening. Anything that anybody ever says to you falls into one of these five categories. They're either telling you data, or they're telling you what they're thinking, or how something is impacting them, or what they're needing, or what it is they want to do, what they see as solutions. It'll give you a way to hear the real issues that are going on. One key in using it is that whenever you get to step five and you're not clear what you should do, what the solution needs to be, or you're not in agreement with others about what that is, then it means you haven't done the first four steps. You need to go back and cover the first four steps more thoroughly. I refer you to worksheet number 22 in your booklets that gives you a form for practicing using it as an analytical tool to write out examples. My experience is that if I spend some time doing this as an analytical tool of writing out examples, that I then naturally do it verbally. I would also strongly encourage you that if you're listening to these tapes with anyone else, if there are others that are familiar with the formula, that you go over each other's examples, because what this formula does is catch all the ways that we distort using the principles. It catches all the ways that we're not in generative thinking. All the ways that you misuse this will be important feedback to you about what you do that does not work in the process of trying to create mutual understanding to get what you need from others. So get yourself a buddy who will give you honest feedback about when you are or are not accurately using each of these five steps, when you have distortion between them, when you contaminate them. It's a very effective way to help each other learn how to do this. Do it until it feels natural to you, till you don't have to think about doing it. I think you'll be amazed at the results you can get from others when you use this process.
This is the end of tape 12. We hope that the principles and skills of no-fault negotiating will help you both personally and professionally. They've really been proven to make a difference. We believe so strongly in the value of these principles and skills that we're committed to helping you learn and implement them. We invite you to call our office in Portland, Oregon for coaching if you'd all feel blocked in using these skills. This is Tom Walters wishing you well.